Welcome to episode 27 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. My name is Randy Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
Doing well. Here in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. Never heard of this place before booking this hotel. It's about like an hour outside of Williamsport. Just nothing going on over here.
I went to college in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Amish country. So I know a lot of these small, I don't want to disrespect them and call them random towns, but small towns in Pennsylvania. I became kind of like an expert in a lot of those like places. So I actually have heard of it. I might be one of the few people that have. But yeah, that's Pennsylvania for you.
Yeah. Not much going on. Chain restaurants. Random Mexican restaurants that probably have no seasoning in the restaurants. Yeah, there's just nothing going on over here. I gotta get out of this town.
Yeah. Are you taking the train back? How are you getting back to New York?
No, I rented a car. So.
Oh, you drove. Okay. Yeah, that was we can get into the Yankees in a second, but I would always take the train back and forth from New York to my college, and that was one of the best things about it. It's like a beautiful, it's always a beautiful ride, especially when you get past Philly, and then you keep going west towards Harrisburg. And I always used to take like long Amtrak trips with my grandmother and my sister, like across the country, sort of like New York to Montana, New York to Denver. Like we used to do like these big trips. So I always appreciate like the train ride from Pennsylvania to New York, because, you know, you just see a different part of the country, even though there's like unseasoned Mexican restaurants in a lot of these places.
No, I like the train. When I go to DC next week, I'll be on Amtrak. I enjoy train travel. I wish it was more, what's the word, like readily available in a lot of places. I mean, living in the Northeast now, it's definitely easier to get around to like DC, Boston, Philly, all those places. But, you know, when I was in Atlanta, there's nothing. Like you have to have a car to get around.
Right. Yeah, no, it's great. I highly recommend it if you just want to like travel a different way. All right. We'll do the travel podcast next week. Let's get into the Yankees. This is going to be a little different in the sense that this might be a little bit more free flowing because we spoke briefly before we started recording. I have no idea what's going on with this team. I do want to preface this by saying I still firmly believe the Yankees can win the World Series this year. Like, I have not wavered from that. I think we agree. We've talked about it multiple times that they're in that like group of teams that can win the World Series. I still believe that. I haven't seen anything from any other team that tells me that they have that the Yankees have no shot against X opponent. At the same time, I don't think the Yankees have told X opponent that the Yankees can definitely beat you either. So I have lost all kind of understanding of this team. They're consistently inconsistent, and you can point to like very obvious things like the bullpen, like the Yankees offense not clicking consistently, but it just seems like you never know what you're going to get with this team. And there's so many different elements and situations that happen in each individual game that determine the outcome. And it feels like the variance there's too much variance with this team from day to day, which is odd to say over a 162 game season. But there really is a variance that happens with this team from day to day where it's just very hard for me to grasp who this team really is.
I mean, I think that's just the 2024 MLB season as a whole. You know, I know most of the listeners are probably just watching the Yankees, and, you know, they're definitely frustrating to watch at times, but if you just look around the league and watch other games, like I was watching the Orioles Red Sox game on, I think, Saturday.
Their bullpen's terrible.
Baltimore's. And, you know, you watch that game and it's like, wait, this is supposed to be like one of the best teams in baseball. So it's not even just the Yankees who are frustrating to watch, but it's really the entire entire league. You know, no team is projected to win at least 100 games, which would be the first time since 2014 that that would happen. You know, the Dodgers came into this season, you know, by far the favorites to win it all, and they haven't put it together. They've obviously had a lot of injuries, especially to their pitching staff. The Orioles had a lot of talent. They just haven't been able to have any sort of consistency. And even the Yankees, you know, both the Yankees and the Orioles have had so many opportunities to put the division race to bed, like even in mid-August as we're talking, and neither team has taken advantage. So I think for the division race in particular, it's probably going to come down to the three games at home next month. You know, the Yankees have to sweep that series to get the tiebreaker over the Orioles, which is obviously going to be tough. And I think we'll probably be talking about the game right before the All-Star break where Verdugo face plants and Volpe bobbles the ball, because that game in particular could be the difference between winning the division and being a wild card team. I think it's going to be a close race the entire way. It literally could come down to just one game. And if the Orioles have the tiebreaker, well, they're the division champions and probably have the number one seed in the American League. So it's a huge difference for the Yankees to, you know, either win the division or be in the wild card. Cause in a three game wild card, I don't know how you can trust this team to win. Like I couldn't, like if I was betting money on it, like I wouldn't feel great if I had the Yankees, because they've shown that they can lose a three-game series to basically any team, regardless of their talent level, as we saw this weekend. I mean, I think the Yankees, outside of extra innings, Gleyber Torres scoring on a wild pitch, I think the offense scored like three runs against the Tigers. Yeah. You know, they were in two really tight games against the White Sox. Like it was 2-1, I think, in the seventh inning in that final game against the White Sox before they blew it open and won 10-2. So you never really know what you're getting from the Yankees on a day-to-day basis. Like I wouldn't be surprised if they swept the Guardians this week. They start a three-game series tomorrow. Well, today when you're listening to this, Tuesday to Thursday, wouldn't be surprised if they swept them. Wouldn't be surprised if they got swept. I just don't know what to expect with this team on a day-to-day basis. And I think when you're looking at October as a whole, as we've seen in the wild card era, especially, like the team that gets hot in October normally wins. Like the Rangers got hot, really hot. They had a lot of question marks going into the playoffs and they won. So I think it's just going to come down to which team is playing the best in October, which team has things clicking for the most part, and that team's probably going to win this year.
Yeah, it's the dreaded Brian Cashman crapshoot playoffs. I mean, I know a lot of people resent that phrasing, but it's going to be accurate this year because there isn't a favorite going into this on the National League side or the American League side. There isn't one team that I can point to and say, yeah, man, like it's theirs to lose. And that includes Houston. We said this about a month or two ago, that Houston was probably going to go on a run and win that division because that division's bad. And I know that they've played better, but the division kept them in the race. You know what I mean? So like, I know that they have the pedigree. They deserve to have people give them the respect. They've earned it. But I wouldn't consider them favorites either. I mean, I think that you can put the Astros in the mix with everybody else. And then it's kind of like the subjective respect that they have that people will kind of put them in their own category. But if you actually look at that team, they're just like everybody else, really. So I feel the same way about the Phillies. the Dodgers have had their issues. I didn't buy into the Dodgers because I thought that they still had a bunch of holes. They had more holes than I thought they did when the season started. So I'm not totally surprised by the Dodgers' like inconsistency. I thought they would be better, obviously, but I think that they were very clear holes. And even when we had our conversation about them when they had this series with the Yankees, I had like concerns about them. But yeah, I mean, you obviously see the team every day. And I'm curious to know or find out from you, what are the things in your opinion that contribute to this inconsistency and this variance? Because they're talented. You know, they're playing the Tigers. They're very clearly more talented than the Tigers. The Tigers are the youngest team in the majors. I mean, they just brought up a whole bunch of guys that have never played Major League Baseball before, like last week. And they played the White Sox, who are awful. And they're in like these close games with these teams that, you know, they should, I won't say dominate because they're major leaguers, but that they should, the variance shouldn't be there. So what do you think are the contributing factors or some of the contributing factors into their up and down performances from day to day?
I mean, I think number one, it's the bullpen. You never know what you're getting out of the bullpen every day. I think that's the main issue that the Yankees are facing right now. And we've been talking about it all season long. I think maybe in our first episode, we were talking about the bullpen. Oh. So I think that's number one. They, you know, Clay Holmes is obviously, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about Clay more in depth, but I do think he's a good pitcher. I do think that he's been unlucky this year, and I know fans probably don't want to hear that. I know they want his head on a stake right now, but, you know, it's baseball sometimes, and shit happens. I just don't know. I just don't know like how to explain it. Like last season, Emmanuel Clase led MLB with blown saves. He had 12. This year, I think you would be insane if you would say anyone but him is the best closer in baseball. Like this stuff just happens sometimes. And there are some factors that go into play and hit and his 10 blown saves. Like, you know, several of those have been unlucky. Balls have found holes. Balls are hit so softly that guys are beating them out for infield singles.
Right.
You know, last night was different in that, you know, they were two solid hits, the double down the line, and then Jace Young laced a single to left field for the Tigers to tie it up. But you know, I think if you're just looking at some of the factors that can explain some of the inconsistency, I think it has to start with the bullpen. And then what we've seen out of the offense, you know, if guys like Judge and Soto aren't like going in a god mode, it can be difficult for them to win games. Like Soto was held hitless in the series against the Tigers, and as we saw, the Yankees had problems scoring. So I think a lot of it, when we look ahead to October, their success is going to be, can Judge and Soto continue to play at god mode? And then can the Yankees get two, three guys around them who can actually be decent to above average hitters? I don't know. It feels like sometimes it's asking a lot with this team because you just don't know what you're getting out of the guys who are around Judge and Soto in the lineup. Like you would hope that Stanton could be one of those guys, but you just don't know what you're getting out of him. Glaber has hit well, but he just doesn't slug anymore. It's weird. He's a singles hitter now. Right. We've talked about Verdugo and Volpe ad nauseum. Those two are probably not going to be the guys who pick it up. So a lot of it is going to come down to, can Glaber and Stanton hit to their pedigree? And again, you just don't know what you're getting from them.
I would put Wells in that group too. If he gets the playing time.
Yeah, Wells definitely. He has shown an ability to hit well. The one thing I'm very curious to see when we get to October, like the Yankees just have a complete inability this year to hit left-handed pitching.
Yep.
And Wells is one of those guys who really struggles against lefties. I know everybody was freaking out when the lineup came out last night against Skubal. And I get that one because Skubal is dominant against both hands. Skubal's dominant against anybody. Yeah. So it's not really like that big of a difference if you have Trevino in there against Skubal as opposed to Wells. But even just like an average left-handed pitcher, Wells hasn't hit lefties well. And I'm very curious to see if teams just throw their lefties in the playoffs against them. Like they haven't hit lefties well at all. And, you know, if they play the Astros in the playoffs at some point, you know, Valdez and Kikuchi could be game one and two, and you're down 2-0 because you haven't hit left-handed pitching all year. So it's certainly a problem. And at this point, like, we're almost in September, they haven't hit left-handed pitching all year. I mean, at this point, I don't think they're going to be able to hit left-handed pitching.
Yeah, it's interesting how for so many years the issue was they couldn't hit right-handed pitching, and now it's like the opposite, even though they still have a bunch of their right-handed hitters in the lineup. You know, it's not like they've completely switched over to the left side. It's way more balanced just handedness-wise, and now they have a total issue with any kind of lefty, like you mentioned. You could be Skubal, or you could be some like junk baller guy who just happens to throw left-handed and they can't hit him.
Yeah, you know, it's weird.
Yeah, it's very weird. One thing I've noticed, while you were speaking, I was trying to quickly look this up, but I'm kind of like going in different directions. One thing I've noticed, at least offensively, and I tweeted about this specifically about Alex Verdugo, but I think that this is true for a bunch of guys right now. And I'm not sure if just because it's like later in the season, guys are tired or whatever, but it feels like they're struggling against fastballs. And I know Verdugo's had struggles against fastballs all year, but it feels for a bunch of guys, they're just not handling four-seam fastballs, especially up, really well right now. And like another guy that I know that's true, it happens like all the time, is Gleyber. And I think that's part of the reason why he's not slugging as much. It just feels like he fouls off a lot of four-seam fastballs and he's tipping a lot of them. And like, you know, he's having some like bad luck because the catcher will catch the tips. I mean, that, you know, there isn't a skill there. It's just luck. Volpe, the same thing. There's like three guys I can think of like right off the top of my head that at least recently, it feels like just dealing with fastballs has been an issue. Verdugo's had an issue with that all year. Like you can guarantee, I'm not trying to like dump on Verdugo this week. This is just an observation. I'm not like,
you're sure?
I'm totally sure, because I'm not going to say anything else about him beyond this. There's like two things that I feel like I know I'm going to get out of an at bat from Verdugo. Him missing like two fastballs, like right in the zone. He'll just foul them off. He'll just miss them, and or like a ground ball to second base. And I feel like sometimes they're connected. Like he just cannot square up a fastball consistently. I don't think Gleyber can either. And Volpe, back in that slump, I think is also having issues with four seamers. Now, this is just, I was trying to look it up, but I was also like paying attention to what you were saying. So like my search wasn't great. It just feels like to the naked eye, going from game to game, when they have these like up and down offensive performances, that's like one of the issues here. And I don't know if that's, again, I don't know if that's just happening because it's happening and, you know, it's the dog days of August, guys are tired and it's like hard to hit velocity even when you're like feeling good. Or if this is becoming a trend, I'm not totally sure, but it's something that I've noticed in these games where the offense is not like totally clicking, that there are just a lot of fastballs that guys are just missing. And if they do make contact, they're like not driving the ball. So it's just something that I've noticed like over the last like couple weeks, actually, even when they were going well, like they did better against fastballs than they are right now.
I looked it up with Verdugo because I know Volpe has been worse against fastballs this year. But I was curious to see what Verdugo was doing this year. His slugging against fastballs is way down. He's slugging 364 against fastballs this year. Last year it was 497. Batting average 212 against fastballs this year, 280 last year. I don't know what Glaber is at. I'm sure it's down just because, you know, he's obviously having a worse offensive season as a whole this year. But yeah, like it's certainly noticeable, especially with Verdugo, because it looks like he is just missing fastballs because like he is getting good contact on them. It's just going on the net.
Right.
Which is obviously less than ideal because you want it
on the field. Fair.
Yeah. But yeah, like the slugging being down over 130 points this year with Verdugo is certainly troubling. I'm sure you saw the story with him and his batting gloves, which I thought was very interesting. For those who didn't see, Randy Miller wrote a story on Verdugo being allergic to his batting gloves. I've never heard of such a thing. One of the things that one of the questions I had after reading it is, you know, in the story, Randy says that he's been struggling with his hands for like 3 years now, but you know, he was okay, at least offensively in the past couple of years with Boston. So it wasn't like he was terrible as he is this year. So I don't know if that's like a reason for his struggles this year, or he's just, you know, a worse version of himself. So I think that was the main question I had with that story. It's like, okay, like he was okay with the Red Sox. Now he's really bad. I don't know if like his hands got worse or something like that, but that was one of the questions I had after reading that story.
Yeah. And I think his run value against every pitch that's thrown at him, Verdugo, his worst run value is against the four seamer. And I don't, you know, he's not the only one right now. And just feels like that's a problem. And I don't know if this is like just a part of their offensive identity that that's a lot of these guys struggle with velocity, or it's just kind of a blip. But I do think it's something to pay attention to as like we move forward, because it's not just like handedness of the pitcher, but it's also like the arsenal of the pitcher. Like they're struggling against guys that have pretty good fastballs. And for some of them, the fastballs aren't even that great. They're just missing them, like, or they're just fouling it off. So it could just be, you know, baseball stuff, or it could be something else. I don't know, but it's something that I've noticed over time. So
before you move on, one thing I wanted to say is when we're talking about fastballs, I think teams have made it pretty clear that they don't believe that Ben Rice can catch up to high right. velocity. Like they've just been pounding him with their fastest stuff, and he's been struggling lately. So it's definitely not just a Verdugo issue or a Volpe issue or a Glaber issue. It's multiple people.
Yeah, it definitely feels like it's a lineup issue for a lot of the guys right now. All right, so we're going to take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about everybody's new favorite topic, the Yankees bullpen. And we're back. So we talked about this a little bit, but the bullpen is, again, the biggest issue on this team. And it's not just Holmes. It's you can basically, outside of a couple people, pull a name out of a hat, and you're probably going to have someone that's having an issue out of the pen. And Aniel De Los Santos gets DFA'd. They just get him, and now he's already like DFA'd. That was not a good trade. And I mean, I said it on here. I thought it was going to work because I thought he had some qualities that Matt Blake could kind of enhance. I was totally wrong. The Yankees were wrong. That just didn't work. That was not a good move. Mark Leiter Jr. has been awful. And for some reason, I believe he has his usage of his splitter has decreased, which makes no sense to me. That's like his best pitch. And I believe we had spoken about this when they got him that, you know, we thought it was a little odd that they acquired somebody whose best pitch is a splitter, which is completely an outlier for the profile of pitchers that they bring in. And it feels like it's not working right now. Because I don't even remember him throwing splitters at this point. And I know Boone yesterday talked about his fastball, but it's like his better pitch is a splitter, and it feels like he's not using it as much. Holmes, I agree with you in terms of just like some of the bad luck. It also, I'll just keep saying this, like his command needs to be better. Like he's also like creating some of the bad luck just because his command is so inconsistent. Even though he has great stuff. Kane Lee has been largely good, but he also has his moments. Like, I don't feel totally comfortable when Kane Lee's in the game. I don't know. It's just the bullpen's not good. I don't think it's a good bullpen. And, like, you have to hold your breath every time a guy comes into the game. Jay Cousins has been good, and Weaver's been good, outside of a couple spots. But Weaver's been good. Cousins has been really good. But they got to get this bullpen straightened out because it's like Baltimore and the Yankees are like trying to outdo one another with how horrible their bullpens can be from like game to game. They both have terrible bullpens.
It's bad. I'm looking at the, again, reliever ERA is not the best, but it's obviously the one that fans can understand easiest. Since June 1st, Tommy Kahnle has the best ERA out of the bullpen. He has a 1.91 ERA over 28 and a third innings. Second is Jake Cousins at 1.99. Then Tim Hill, who's obviously not pitching in the most high leverage situations, 2.77. Then Tonkin, 3.18. And then everyone else in the bullpen is over 4. That includes Weaver at 4.11. Holmes, 4.21. Victor Gonzalez, who was part of the team at that time, 4.60. Caleb Ferguson was 4.60. Gonzalez, 5.14. Mark Leiter, 6.48. At this point, like, the Yankees are probably hoping that one of the guys who's injured or in AAA can be a part of this bullpen by October. That includes Ian Hamilton, Nick Birdie, Scott Efros, but the Yankees have already told us how they feel about Efros and Birdie in particular, because they called up Tim Mesa this weekend, who they signed off the waivers after the Blue Jays DFA'd him. And Mesa was terrible this year with Toronto. He had I think it was an 8.03. ERA with the Blue Jays, which is absolutely absurd. And then they chose him over Birdie and Efros, who are in AAA and at this point healthy. So I don't know if Efros or Birdie are going to be a part of this team at any point this year. Hamilton is still working his way back, but even before his injuries, he didn't look like the same pitcher he was last season. So I don't know how to feel about him. You know, when Clark Schmidt comes back, they'll probably have to make a decision on who goes to the bullpen out of the rotation. Maybe it is Clark. You know, he's probably going on a rehab assignment this week. And, you know, Cashman said the other day, at latest, he'll be back in like the second week of September. That's obviously not a lot of time. Clark has bullpen experience. He was really good this year. I don't know if he can be fully built up by the time he comes back. So maybe it is Clark to help stabilize the bullpen somewhat. And, you know, I do think that he would be good out of the bullpen. They need help there. They need a lot of help. I don't think it's going to be Luis Hill just because of the fact that, you know, he doesn't have pristine command. And I don't know if I would trust him in a one or two inning situation just because he's one of those guys too, where you just don't know what you're getting. Like, he could be absolutely incredible and look like one of the best pitchers. And then he can also give up five walks. It's like, you just don't know what you're getting. And out of the bullpen, you need someone who's, you know, at least trustworthy with their command. And I don't know if I would trust him with his command. So maybe it is Clark. Maybe it's Nestor. I don't know. The only thing I do know for sure is they need help back there, because I just don't know how this bullpen can get through several rounds in October. I don't trust them on a day-to-day basis, no matter who the opponent is. And I know fans definitely hold their breath when Clay Holmes comes in, but there's so many guys in this bullpen right now where you just don't know what you're getting that day.
Yeah, I mean, I share the sentiment. I said multiple times last night to myself or the TV or whoever I was talking to, they need like two or three more runs to win this game. And I'm talking about a game against the Detroit Tigers, who have thrown the towel in and decided that this was going to be that they were going to finish this season to develop their young guys, who I think their young guys were okay. They were fine. Like, I don't think that they were like overly impressive. I like Colt Keith, but he's been here all year. He's starting to get it a little bit, but it's not like I didn't see like super impressive young guys that you're just like, wow, okay, like I see why they're making this decision to go this way. That's who they have and they're rolling with it.
Yeah, I mean, I like some of their young guys. I think Riley Green is good. He's having a really good
season. Riley Green. Yes, Riley Green is good, but he was also, right. Wasn't he an all-star?
This year, I don't know. But he is under, he's 23 or 22 years old. Kerry Carpenter, I think, is a solid big leaguer. Like, they have some
good players. I meant more. Yeah. No, I meant more like Jace Young and Colt Keith and the guys that they just called up and Trey Sweeney. More of them. Like, I like Kerry Carpenter and Riley Green. They're good. I was talking about more like the more recent call-ups. But yeah, those guys are good. But I mean, it's not like they called up Gunnar Henderson, is more what I mean. You know what I mean? So it's like I'm sitting here like they really need to score two or three more runs here to beat the Tigers, who at the time didn't even score a run. You know what I mean? And it's like there's no way that like the Yankees brass and Aaron Boone can tell us what they want to tell us to give off, like, you know, whatever impression, but there's no way that they feel comfortable day in and day out with this bullpen. I mean, they know more about what's going on than we do. And every time a new guy comes in here, none of us know what's going to happen. Like, there's no certainty with anybody coming out of the bullpen. And it's been like that all year. Like, I would give Weaver some credit, but your numbers that you just gave us show that he hasn't been as good as he was earlier in the year. It's just, there isn't anybody reliable. Like, and we don't even have to talk about the closer position. It's middle relief. It's like the people in the back end is nobody. Like when you come in, you have no idea where this game is going to go. And obviously the trade deadline has passed. So it's on these guys to figure it out. And we're getting to the point where it's like, I don't know if you can figure it out. Like, you guys are who you are. And it's almost as if the team has to compensate for that, which puts more pressure on the starters and the offense. I mean, you basically have to insulate yourself from the bullpen, because there's no way that you can go into it believing with 100% conviction that day to day, the bullpen can give you a full performance. And again, it's like that inconsistency and that variance from guy to guy within a game, every game becomes taxing after a while. And it hasn't stabilized at all. Like, at no point with anybody. It's just like, it's hard to navigate. It's hard to watch, but it's hard to navigate, you know, if you're actually involved, that there's so much instability within a game. And I know that, like, there's been this sentiment lately from some people on Twitter. I've seen it a bunch lately that Yankees fans are going after other Yankees fans for saying you're treating every game like it's a NFL game and like it's the Super Bowl. And it's like, that's not what people are doing, I don't think. Like, I want to defend people's reactions here. I'm not necessarily doing that, but like, I see people doing it, and I actually think it's justified in the sense that there is so much instability and inconsistency within a game, every game, that after a while, I think that instability leads people to overvalue each game, because there's no like flow of like consistent positive production, if that makes sense. Like, it is so up in the air all the time that after a while it's natural to just treat the games bigger than they are, because there's so many swings in every game, and it's like nothing's normal or like straightforward or like comfortable or dominant at times. It's just, you literally from inning to inning, when there's a new guy in there, you don't know what's going to happen. When in the past, you're like, okay, the seventh and eighth inning guys are there. They've had a good season. I feel good that like this game is taken care of. They don't have one guy that can do that. And it's every game. Yeah. So it's like, well, how else would you expect someone to react? It's uncomfortable if you're invested in it every inning. It's not even like every game. It's every inning when you get past a certain point. And it's like, if they don't score runs, then I think people's anxiety or whatever starts to rise, because you know what could happen. And it happened again last night.
I think two things can be true here. Number one, I think the front office did a great job in seeing something in Michael Tonkin and Jay Cousins, because they've been two of their best relievers. And I also think it could be a problem that a team with World Series aspirations is relying on Michael Tonkin and Jake Cousins. Yep. And that's kind of the reality of the Yankees bullpen situation right now, is like those two guys are going to be pitching big innings in October at this point. So two things can be true. Like, yes, they did a great job in finding something in both those guys. And then on the flip side, it's like, those are two of your best guys who you found off the scrap heap that no one else wanted. It's a precarious situation for the Yankees to be in, because like I said, I just don't know how you can trust this group to get you through several rounds in the playoffs. Cause I just don't trust them on a Tuesday night game against the Angels.
Right.
Like, how are they supposed to get through, you know, the Astros, the Orioles, or whoever, the Guardians, the Twins, whoever they face in the playoffs. Like, I don't know. And those teams have really good offenses. Like the Twins, whatever, however you want to feel about them, like their offense has been really good. The Guardians have a really good offense this year. We know about the Orioles. I just don't know how this bullpen is going to stack up against some of these offenses that they're going to face in October. Because they can't do it against the Tigers. They can't do it against the Angels. So we're supposed to believe that this group can do it against the best teams in baseball. I don't know.
Let me ask you a question here. Do you believe in teams playing down to their competition? And if you do you think the Yankees are doing that?
I do believe it to some degree. I asked Verdugo, like, if he felt like it was a wake up call when the Yankees lost. And apparently that pissed some people off in the clubhouse. Whatever. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I think it's a fair question. You lost against a team that had 27 wins.
Sorry. Wait, hold on. The players were mad at you for asking that question?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Come on.
Yeah. I mean, that's a separate issue.
It sounds like it.
But like, are they like going into the game thinking like, oh, it's the White Sox, like we should just beat the ever living shit out of them. And it doesn't matter like how we play, because we'll just win at the end of the day. I don't know how they're feeling about that, but even outside of this year, like, it's definitely been a recurring theme that the Yankees sometimes struggle against teams that they should definitely beat. We saw it earlier in the season against the Reds. That team should have been, you know, three free wins, because they were playing like shit at the time. And the Yankees are obviously in a contested division race. And, you know, you see these teams on your schedule and you should be like, oh yeah, let's go. Like, let's kick their ass. And you just don't get that sense from them. It kind of goes back to, you know, we've mentioned it before, like the Harrison Bader quote, like, yeah, everything's good. We'll just get them the next day. And, you know, doesn't matter if we win or lose today. It's everything's all good. But yeah, I don't know. I've definitely gotten the sense that is certainly an issue, but I can't say definitively if they do or don't play down to their competition. But, you know, some of these series that they have, it's like, how did they lose? These are teams that you should be beating. I mean, three games at home against the Angels, who are awful, and you lose two of three. Like, I get one of those was a doubleheader, but still, it's like, you got to win those series.
Yeah, these teams aren't playing for anything. They're playing for development. You know what I mean? Like, some of these, the White Sox and the Tigers clearly are just playing these games out to evaluate, one, with the White Sox, a manager, two, their players. Detroit has made a conscious decision to bring their young guys up and develop them and evaluate them. I mean, you shouldn't be in like multiple closely contested games with these teams. Like, I don't know. I will say I would not be surprised if they played well against Cleveland this week.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they swept them. I wouldn't be surprised if they got swept.
Exactly. How it is. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to go so far as to say that they play down to their competition, but it just feels like they're in too many close games with teams that they should just be taken care of. Like, they're not free wins, but they're easier wins than obviously playing like a team like Cleveland. So I don't know. It's odd. One more thing with the bullpen. I'm strictly speaking as a fan here now. If the Yankees had like a good bullpen, I would chalk them up as favorites to win the title. And I would say that with like the utmost confidence. Like, if they could just fix their bullpen, which I don't think is going to happen at this point. I would like to be wrong. I don't think it's happening. They would be the odds-on favorite in my mind.
I agree with you.
It's just like, it is so clear what the number one issue is here that it's just like frustrating that it has not been fixed. And I know that like Cashman obviously tried to address it at the deadline. It has not worked so far. And in hindsight, he probably should have done more to get the better arms on the market. But that's playing the hindsight game. I acknowledge that, but also at the same time, he probably should have done it. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, if they can fix that, then I think they're good to go, even with some of the offensive inconsistency. But
absolutely,
there's not one person I can point to and say, man, I know when he's in the game, like they're in good hands, I guess. Right. And it's almost as if like that one maybe rotates every week. So right now, I would say Jake Cousins or like Tonkin. Could be somebody else next week, which I don't think is good.
No, it's not good, because you definitely want some sort of consistency in October. Right. And I did write at the time when they got De Los Santos, I wrote that they probably should have gotten a better reliever on the market. Like, the Royals acquired Lucas Erceg from the A's. The price wasn't high. I don't know. That's what I wanted. I don't know how he's doing since the trade deadline, but, you know,
very well.
Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising. I think he's a really good pitcher, but I wrote in that story, I was like, that's probably the guy, considering the price that the Royals paid, which was not high, probably should have targeted him. They got De Los Santos, who was clearly a project, because they saw the slider metrics and it was really encouraging. But it, obviously it just didn't work out. The Yankees needed two relievers. They got one, and the one they got has been awful. Right. So it's, they're kind of back at square one with the bullpen of like, these are the guys that we have, and hopefully one of these guys or two of these guys can figure something out in the next month.
Right. All right. We're going to go to break, and then we'll come back with the mailbag. And we're back. It's mailbag time. We had a couple questions that would, I mean, predictably talk about the bullpen. So, Hector, we got your email. We want to shout you out because we did get your email. But we've had multiple questions about the bullpen. So we'll just like jump into one that kind of like covers everything. From Robert, big fan of the pod, and you're writing for The Athletic. When an ending of the game tonight, yesterday, this bullpen is, or 2 days ago when you listen to this, this bullpen is frustratingly bad, and it added insult to injury. How ravaged on the Sunday night baseball call. Kept repeating how good the Yankees' pen has been. I don't know how much longer the blind faith in Holmes can go for, and the bullpen deadline acquisitions have been total failures. Wondering what your thoughts are for what we do at the pen and closer roles moving forward. I know there are no good options.
First off, I did not know that Carl Ravitch said the Yankees pen has been good.
Oh, he said it multiple times, and I know everybody was like, what pen are you talking about?
I don't know what games he's watching.
I don't know either. And I like Carl Ravitch. He's awesome, but I didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah, that is funny. But as far as the closer role, I still think it's Holmes, honestly. I think there are no better options, really. I mean, you can talk yourself into Luke Weaver or Tommy Kahnle or Jay Cousins, who obviously doesn't have much experience in those situations. You know, he just got his first career save in Chicago the other day. But I still believe in Holmes. I do think he has been very unlucky, truthfully. And, you know, luck usually evens out over time. I know it's, you know, we're almost in September now. I still think he's the best option, honestly. Like, since they acquired him and made him the closer, like, his numbers are good. And, you know, I think sometimes Yankee fans in particular can be, what's the word? I guess aggressive toward closers, like ever since Mariano retired. Like, they just expect every time the game's in the ninth inning that the Yankees are going to win if they have a lead. It's just not like that, realistically, like across baseball. Like, you're going to lose games. Mariano was one of one. We'll probably never see someone like him again. I still think Holmes is the guy, honestly. I do think that luck will even out over time, and kind of have to hope that it does, because, you know, I don't think Luke Weaver is much better than him, and I don't think Tommy Kahnle is a much better option than him.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. That my only thing, and I'll keep going back to it, is his command. I mean, if he had better command, then I think he would be like a dominant closer. I think that that has a lot to do with it. Yeah, I mean, I don't want any of those other guys closing. I mean, he has the best stuff. I do think he's been unlucky to a degree. I think he creates some of that bad luck, so he's not like totally absolved from it. But yeah, he's the only option. I agree with you. I mean, he's the closer. Boone did kind of give like a.
Yes, I did think his answer was interesting. If you didn't hear the post-game press conference on Sunday, usually like when we ask those kinds of questions of like having faith in a player or, you know, is he the guy, Boone normally would like shoot that down and, you know, be very definitive. You know, sometimes he'd be like, why are you asking that question? Like, that's stupid, essentially. Right. Like how his answers come across. He did kind of leave the door open to a possible change in the future. Like, he did say Clay is his guy, but it wasn't 100% Clay is our guy and that's it. No one else is in the conversation. you know, he mentioned the fact that several of the bullpen arms have been throwing the ball well. I would disagree with that, but he is the manager, so he's going to say that.
Maybe you talk to Carl Ravitch.
Yeah, Carl Ravitch is actually Mike Harkey now. Exactly. But yeah, I did think his answer was interesting, though, because it wasn't the definitive Boone answer that he usually gives of, this is my guy, no one else is coming for his job, and that's it. So we'll see moving forward. I do think that they'll still have Holmes in the closer role, honestly. And until someone emerges who looks completely shut down in the eighth or ninth inning or seventh inning, then I think for the foreseeable future, it's probably going to be Holmes.
I'm with you. I know people don't want to hear that, but I mean, they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, as they say. All right. Next question. Randy Cadenhead. It's a good first name, Randy. Clearly, Wells has earned the number one slot. Are you confident in how Boone will handle this? Sure, he needs a day off a week, but come on. I hope he handles it. I mean, I don't. We spoke about it earlier. Wells against left-handed pitching, he's not good yet. So there is a lane, everybody's favorite term this year, for Trevino to get some starts, and he's clearly going to start when Cole pitches. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious.
Yep.
But I hope Boone handles it, but I'm not confident or totally like convicted in that idea. I mean, Boone does look at the numbers and he does like platoons and he does like to play that matchup game. And I know what he said in terms of Wells earning more playing time, but that might just be like 60-40, not 70-30 or 80-20 in Boone talk. So I think this is a wait and see thing. I'm not totally convinced that the person that should be playing more will be playing more, just going off the history of how Boone deploys these players when he has the options, and a very like legitimate reason when it comes to performance against left-handed pitchers that also factors into this. So I can't say with 100% conviction that Wells will get the bulk of the starts. I don't know how you feel, but
yeah, I feel a little differently. We just talked about like some of his answers to questions about being definitive. And one of the things that he has been definitive on, especially in these last few days when we've asked about it, is the split between Wells and Trevino. Like I get Trevino played two of the three against Detroit this weekend, but let's say the Yankees have seven games in a row. Honestly, I do think the split would be 5-2 in Wells's favor. He certainly, Boone has certainly made it clear that Wells is the starting catcher. So I do think that the split isn't going to be 60-40. It's probably closer to 70-30. And with catchers in particular, I know fans like lose their shit when they see Wells on the bench for Trevino, but it's a very demanding position. No catcher is catching 7 days a week, especially one who is a big part of this team as Wells is now. You need him fresh for October. There's no reason to be playing him 7 days a week or 6 days a week when Trevino is a Platinum Glove Award winner. The pitching staff loves pitching to him, and that is that's probably the most important part of being a catcher, honestly, is the defense. And Trevino is arguably the best at it. So Trevino is going to play, but I do think that the split is probably closer to a 70-30 than a 60-40 in favor of Wells, because I do think that Boone has made that part very clear, that Wells is the team starting catcher.
I think Tim has made it clear that Wells should start every game. I mean, that was his, that's his reaction to all of this. Let me ask you this and then we can get out of here. Cause I know you have to check out of your hotel from a beautiful middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. When we get to the playoffs, how do you think that's going to play out? I think that that's more like the important question here or part of the question than like the regular season. Like, how do you think it plays out in the playoffs?
Yeah. I mean, I think game one, Trevino's probably catching because Garrett and Trevino have a very good relationship. And it's clear to me that Cole is most comfortable on the mound with Trevino. You know, fans may think that's stupid, but if the ace of your team thinks that Trevino helps him pitch better, then you know what? You start Trevino. It is what it is. I think fans would take six scoreless innings and Cole looks comfortable on the mound rather than Cole giving up four runs to Wells because he doesn't feel most comfortable. I think that's the trade-off you have to make in this situation. So I would expect that when game one rolls around, whoever they're facing, lefty, righty, doesn't matter. I assume Garrett Cole is going to be starting game one, and I think Trevino is going to be behind the plate. After that, I don't know. You know, Carlos has pitched a lot to Wells. If Carlos is the game two starter, I would think that Wells is probably behind the plate. And I still think the split is going to be in Austin's favor in the postseason. You know, it's possible that the only time that Trevino's behind the plate is when Garrett is on the mound.
I think I'm with you on that. Hopefully they'll have a long enough playoff run so we can actually see how it unfolds. But yeah, Trevino is definitely starting game one. I mean, that you can lock that in right now. So yeah, we'll see how it plays out. But thank you for the question. I think it's something to monitor as we move forward, see how it all plays out. So we're going to wrap this up so Chris can get out of his hotel room. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I'm looking forward to leaving Bloomsburg and getting back to Manhattan.
It's good.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Old Timers Day this weekend. A-Rod is making his first appearance.
Yeah.
CeCe's making his first appearance. I'm interested to hear what some of these guys think of A-Rod getting his respect from the Yankees. It'll never happen, but I am interested in hearing if they think that A-Rod should have his number retired because their opinions do matter. I want to ask Jeter about it. I'm very curious to know what he would say about it on the record. I'm sure off the record, it may be a different answer. I don't know, but I am interested in hearing if they think that A-Rod should be in Monument Park. I get the history between the him and the franchise. It'll probably never happen. But if you look at his numbers, undeniably one of the greatest Yankees in the team's history. And he helped win them the title in 09. Like without A-Rod, I don't know if they win.
Yeah, I have a very hard time seeing that happen.
It's not gonna happen, but I am interested in hearing what you know, some of the guys in Monument Park think about it.
I will say this. I don't think there's any shot of it happening. I mean, I'm going to say it, but we can't have a long conversation about this. I don't think it happens as long as Cashman's there.
I agree with you.
I mean, I just don't think it's happening.
Yeah. I don't think it'll happen. With how it ended and how things transpired, there's probably a 0% chance.
Yeah. Maybe way down the line, but I don't think it's happening anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree.
Not with the current group of people that are there.
Nope.
My final thought, I just want to give a shout out to Jazz Chisholm Jr., who completely nailed the spirit of the Little League game yesterday. He was awesome. He totally nailed it. Like just he did everything right. And that was so great to see. And especially with those like reports from anonymous people questioning his character, when really that was all about him speaking up about his experience in Miami and like people twisted it into something different. I thought he was the most impressive guy out of anybody that showed up to that game yesterday.
1,000%. 1,000%. And I'm glad you mentioned it, because that is part of being a professional athlete, is doing stuff like that. And he went above and beyond. You know, when we talked to Jazz after the game, like, he showed us like his text between him and Russell McGee, the guy who he's now calling his little brother. Like, they exchanged numbers. Jazz is going to be sending him like all the equipment that he could possibly need to, you know, be a baseball player. I thought it was really cool. He basically spent the entire game in the bleachers,
right.
Which,
yeah, right.
which was cool. I know the game didn't end how Yankee fans wanted, but, you know, part of the experience is helping the kids in attendance have lifelong memories. And I'm sure all the kids there are going to remember that they got to watch a baseball game with a major league player.
Like, literally right next to you.
He was sitting in the seats. Like,
yeah. It was awesome. And then Cole signing the kid's hat, who I think also his first name was Cole.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Canadian team doing the shuffle with Soto, yeah. And like Soto, like, acknowledging it. Like,
yeah. That's cool. That's cool stuff.
Yeah, it's good. And the Tigers, like, doing things with the kids as well. I just thought that that was just like really impressive from a lot of people. Also, did not know that like Chisholm was so into like anime. So it's like something I learned about him too. And that, like, you know, he got his grills because of one of the animes that he watches and all that stuff. So I thought he was a star of the day yesterday.
100%.
And there were a lot of people that did well. It wasn't just him, but like, I think he stood out. So I just wanted to shout him out for that. Okay. So Chris is going to check out. You guys are going to subscribe on all the podcast platforms and watch us on the YouTube channel of the same name. Hopefully you give us a 5-star review. All that, like, great stuff. Thank you for the email questions. Thank you for listening. Thank you to the person who shouted out the podcast, to Chris in Williamsport yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
Whoever you are, thank you. That was cool. And with that, we will speak to you next week.